World This Week. I'm Steve Young, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Congress has now approved the stationing of 200 American civilians in the Sinai to supervise the interim accord between Egypt and Israel. Another ceasefire in Beirut breached, but Lebanon again apparently has stepped back from the brink. The Ford administration tries to pour wheat on troubled waters, but the Soviets may be sliding out of an oil deal. And the battle of the budget and income taxes here at home. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, having won approval from the House, went to the Senate side this week to seek ratification of the arrangement for 200 American civilian technicians to be sent to the Sinai. Some on Capitol Hill have seen such a commitment as the start of another Vietnam-like disaster in which large numbers of Americans might be drawn into a conflict between Egypt and Israel. Kissinger sought to assure the Senate Foreign Relations Committee it had seen the full record of American assurances to both countries that there would be no sudden surprises.
I'm authorized on behalf of the President to state that there are no other assurances and undertakings beyond those already submitted to the Congress which are binding upon the United States. We will make no contrary claim in the future, nor can any other government.
In the end, the committee and the Senate were persuaded, and the use of the 200 Americans was approved. Israel was waiting during the 14-day decision-making process and afterward took action, as Tom Fenton reports from Tel Aviv.
After a two-week delay, while Congress debated the controversial proposal to use American technicians in the Sinai, the Israelis finally signed the agreement with Egypt on Friday at UN headquarters on the hill known as the Mount of Evil Council outside Jerusalem. The document not only commits Israel and Egypt to significant military and political concessions, it also commits the United States to a direct role in keeping the Middle East agreement. The 200 lightly armed American civilian technicians will be stationed in the rugged mountainous terrain between the front lines will have a dual role. One, as electronic technicians to operate three watch stations and four unmanned sensor fields in the Mithla and Gedi passes, the classic invasion routes to the Sinai. The other role will be as policemen, to ensure that only authorized persons and equipment are allowed to enter the two larger early warning stations that Egypt and Israel will man in the passes. Some Israeli officials are now wondering whether this unique arrangement might not serve as a precedent for a new agreement with the Syrians on the Golan Heights. Tom Fenton, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
For weeks now, fighting has continued in Lebanon between groups comprised mostly of Christians on the one side and Muslims on the other. There have been several ceasefires which have broken down. More and more, the Lebanese government is looking to outsiders for help. Doug Tunnell reports from Beirut.
The latest ceasefire has been marred by scattered shooting incidents in some parts of the city, but the full-scale warfare that's raged on here for most of this week has subsided. Lebanon's premier, Rashid Karami, announced a new ceasefire at midweek, but that one was shattered by explosions and more gun battles within minutes after it was to take hold. So with Lebanon's capital under a dusk-to-dawn curfew and clashes flaring up in the northern port city of Tripoli, Karami set out on a last-ditch effort to restore order. He traveled to Syria for talks on the crisis with Syrian President Hafez al-Assad and Palestinian commando leader Yasser Arafat. Karami was carrying assurances from the right-wing and Christian factions that they were ready to stop shooting, but only if Syria and Arafat's commandos could pressure the mostly Muslim left wing in Lebanon to honor a new truce. By Saturday morning, after a night of intense fighting in some parts of Beirut, the guns fell silent. And once again, it seemed that Lebanon had stepped back from the brink of disaster just in time. Doug Tunnell for CBS News, Beirut.
Portugal also has been the scene of civil strife in the northern city of Oporto. 60 persons were wounded, more than 120 detained, during fighting mostly between rival extreme left factions. An emergency government meeting in Lisbon resulted in a communique charging that the trouble was triggered by right-wing extremists who had infiltrated the leftist groups in order to bring down the 6th provisional Portuguese government and clear the way for what was termed a quick and easy fascist-type regime. In Spain this week, Generalissimo Francisco Franco named a new chief of the country's paramilitary national police. Franco evidently was responding to demands that he crack down harder on terrorists. Rightist elements in Spain have been insisting that measures even stricter than those that have caused sharp foreign criticism be undertaken to end a series of attacks that have left 9 policemen dead in little more than 2 weeks. President Ford has proposed an $11 billion tax cut next year on top of the $17 billion tax cut, with some modifications, that went into effect this year.
First, I propose that we make a substantial and permanent reduction in our federal taxes. And second, I propose that we make a substantial reduction in the growth of federal spending. Let me emphasize at the outset that these proposals must be tied together in one package. It would be dangerous and irresponsible to adopt one without the other.
The president wants Congress to hold next year's spending to $395 billion and has put Democrats in the position of having to decide what to cut, a politically uncomfortable position. The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Democratic Representative Al Ullman, told CBS News he thinks his constituents will see the Ford proposal as a political ploy.
They, I don't think, are going to be fooled by a ploy that would offer them $28 billion in tax reductions on some kind of a far-fetched program of just reducing a budget and not looking at where you cut.
Democrats are expected to propose their own tax reduction program, but Mr. Ford has vowed to veto any plan that does not include a ceiling on spending. A second round of negotiations for the purchase by the Soviet Union of U.S. grain has been suspended for several days, although progress in the talks is reported. The delay may be linked to a reported snag in oil talks. The New York Times says U.S. negotiators have been trying to parlay the Soviet need for wheat with our wish to obtain Soviet oil at a price cheaper than that available from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. The Soviets are said to have rejected the proposal. The U.S. has lifted an embargo on grain sales to Poland. In view of that, President Ford was asked what's holding up a deal with the Soviets.
It's just a matter of good old Yankee trader actions, and the Yankee traders did pretty well for a long time in this country, and I just think we ought to handle it that way rather than be too soft or not a tough negotiator.
World attention focused again on a Soviet dissident, Andrei Sakharov, father of the Soviet hydrogen bomb, who won the Nobel Prize this week. When he learned of the award, Sakharov renewed an appeal for the release of all Soviet political prisoners. Many people would consider a job offer this week by Danish commander Mogens Gulbrandsen to be a booby prize. Wanted, volunteers for what may be the loneliest military patrol in the world, 2 years on duty in North and Northeast Greenland. The purpose, says Gulbrandsen, in Copenhagen, is to preserve Danish sovereignty over an uninhabited region of the world's biggest island. The pay, up to $18,000 tax-free, for those who stick it out for the full 2 years.
I think it's a challenge. You are your own master. You must think and work as you find it. You have no people to ask how to do. You must do it yourself.
Do you get any different sense of the world and life?
No, I think we are living in our own little world up there.
Alas, Commander Gulbrandsen says there just aren't enough volunteers this year. Young people today, he says, just aren't interested in a real challenge. The World This Week was produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Steve Young, CBS News.